supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Between 10 and 16% of mothers have postpartum depression. That's a high number. And those who are pregnant and under extreme stress have a much higher risk of experiencing it. But what is it? And how is it different from regular clinical depression? We're going to find out today with my guests and what can be done about it. But first, let's hear about a local woman's story.
I'm Amber. I live in West Philadelphia. I'm a wife and I work full time. And when my daughter was being born, I was also a part-time student. I had a lot going on at that time. I did have the baby blues, feeling down about having gained weight, learning how to breastfeed, being able to leave the house with all of the contraptions with a small baby, such as the stroller and the car seat. Everything just felt very overwhelming to get used to and get a system with. I didn't really start to feel the first symptoms of postpartum depression until about 7 or 8 months after giving birth to my daughter. I didn't know what was going on. I was crying a lot. I just lost my sense of optimism and hope, and I really did not know who to turn to. I increasingly would become distracted at work, sometimes go into the bathroom just to cry. There was a point where I felt so overwhelmed that I started having panic attacks when I would come home. I never felt like I would be a danger to my daughter, but I did feel like I would be a danger to myself. There was a breaking point where I didn't know if I could go on, and so I sought medical attention. It was a very difficult point for me, something that I'm still working with and I'm still taking medication for, but I think that it's manageable. I do think about how difficult all of this was and how much I really need to continually fight to get past it. I do feel like a greater awareness is needed for other people because a lot of people don't talk about it. When it comes to being a new mother, a lot of times the experience can be laced in judgment and comparison. I'm very mindful of that and very wary of sharing my story. Life is a struggle. There are going to be challenges. But overcoming those challenges is what makes life sweet. I feel like I have the strength now, as long as I know that I can communicate my needs with others who are close around me, as well as not looking too much at the larger, overwhelming, overarching picture, but breaking things down into small bits and pieces that I can manage.
Thanks to our producer, Jennifer Lynn, for doing that interview for us. We are going to be talking about postpartum depression, what it is, if there's anything that can be done to prevent it, what treatments are, and what's available. Karen Kleiman is an international expert on postpartum depression. She's a psychotherapist, founder of the Postpartum Stress Center, and she co-authored This Isn't What I Expected Now in its second edition. Amy Ruggiero is a mother of two boys. She experienced both postpartum depression both during and afterwards, and she joins us by phone to share her story. Our phone number, by the way, 888-477-9422. 1-800-799. Give us a call if you've experienced postpartum depression or if you're worried about experiencing postpartum depression. As we go on, you might hear some of the risk factors and might want to call in. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Amy, let's start with you. Your story of PPD began when you found yourself crying during your first pregnancy. That was 10 years ago. And you called Karen. What did you think there was wrong about being just weepy?
Actually, I was weepy with what felt like no reason during the first pregnancy. And I would often sit there crying and say, what am I crying for? Why am I sad? This is exactly what I wanted. This is exactly what I'd planned for my whole life. We've been looking forward to this, and this is perfect. This is according to plan. And I just would cry. I just would sit and cry. And so I did a little bit of research and found that Karen, who's this international expert on postpartum depression, was right around the corner from me. And I called her and spoke to her for quite some time on the phone. And it was nice to build sort of that rapport with her, just to have a little bit of a connection there, and someone who said, I understand what you're going through, and here's what you need to do, sort of thing. And then it actually really didn't get too bad until my second pregnancy.
All right,
that's
well,
when
let,
I really...
Before we get to your second pregnancy, I wonder what, were you having emotions too with the weepiness? Were you having thoughts about it, or was it just tears?
It was a lot of sadness, just feeling sad and not quite understanding why.
Not a lot of thoughts.
Not a lot of thoughts at that point, no.
Uh-huh.
No, they weren't that bad when I was during my first pregnancy, no.
So I'd like to hear from both of you about what you guys talked about on the phone. Karen?
Yes.
Maybe, hi. Maybe.
Hi. Sorry, we were having some technical problems.
I know we were. It's what happens with live radio. So tell us what you and Amy talked about.
As Amy pointed out, her sadness and her weepiness was part of her first pregnancy. What really developed with the second one was more of anxiety and some OCD symptoms that fervently got in the way. One of the things that moms can't always understand when the symptoms present themselves is that the symptoms are, you know, they don't feel like symptoms. They feel like who I am. They feel like I'm just a bad mother, and I just wasn't cut out for this, and I made a mistake, and it's hard for them to understand that these are symptoms that are treatable.
So, Amy, let's continue with this story. What happened in your second pregnancy?
My second pregnancy, it started off with a little bit of weepiness, and just there were thoughts with it, and it turned into more than weepiness.
What were the thoughts, Amy?
The thoughts were, I can't believe I've done this. What a huge mistake. I can't handle this. And the second pregnancy was also planned, and I was very excited for it, and so was my husband. And the thoughts in my head were, I don't even want this baby that I have right now anymore. I don't want this one, and I don't want the one I'm pregnant with, and now my life is over. And it was very, very, very dark time for me.
And the thoughts aren't, I might add, just thoughts. They are, you know, what we call intrusive, scary thoughts. So they are pervasive. They are present all the time, no matter what else for some moms, whatever they're doing, whatever they're trying to do, these thoughts keep bombarding them. And, you know, it's sometimes the level of distress can be so great that it's hard to do anything else, literally.
So it's not just a regular thought that most spouses might have, for example, thinking, or any parent. I mean, all of us think at certain times, you know, my kids are a pain, you know, I wish I was free of them. But,
right.
you know.
Right, and that's one of the things, Dan, that we talk about in terms of diagnosis and screening, which makes it so hard, is that so much of what happens to moms overlap, between normal postpartum experiences and what we would call more troublesome symptoms and symptoms that may be part of postpartum depression. They overlap. All new moms are weepy. All new moms have scary thoughts. All new moms, can feel some of these same feelings. And the distinguishing features are really the amount of distress it causes and, how much it interferes with mom's ability to get through the day. So two people can have the same thought. And for one person, she's able to distract herself from it and focus and do what she needs to do. And for other women, the distress is so high, they cannot focus on it. We talk about the frequency, intensity, and duration of these thoughts.
So it's fairly typical for postpartum mothers to maybe be weepy or have these thoughts or maybe even have a mild depression or anxiety.
It's very typical. With baby blues, the statistics are up to as high as 85%, and baby blues have all those symptoms that for moms and for uneducated doctors, I might add, they may not know the difference between, what's the normal baby blues response, because, like I said, all new moms are weepy and scared and sad and anxious and overwhelmed. But first of all, baby blues are time limited. They are 2 to 3 weeks postpartum. That's it. That's it. They're hormonally driven. So when a mom's 4 or 5 months postpartum and having what her family, her friends, her doctor thinks may be bluesy response, symptoms, it's not. It's not. But, Dan, I do want to make sure we mention that these scary thoughts, the research shows us that as many as 91% of all new moms, 91% of all new moms, and as many as 88% of all new dads experience these thoughts. These are unwanted, scary thoughts of harm coming to their baby or something bad happening. These are not women or men with postpartum depression. These are all new parents.
Yeah, and those thoughts are a byproduct of anxiety. And I'll tell you, if you're not scared right after you have your first child, there's just something not happening inside your head.
Well, that's right. We worry more about people who don't have anxiety attached to these thoughts or attached to this time of their life.
Yeah, let me just take a minute and reintroduce both of you. We're talking about postpartum depression, what it is, what it isn't, and we're going to get to what can be done with Karen Kleiman, who's an international expert on this, and Amy Ruggiero, who is a mother of two boys who experienced postpartum depression. Hey, Amy, by the way, I wonder if my tense is accurate, experienced. Past tense?
Yes. At this point, I would say definitely experienced, but it's will forever remain a part of my life.
How so?
In that, as a mom, I'm a stay-at-home mom. I work from home. I do some work from home.
How old's your youngest?
The youngest is now 9.
Okay.
Recently turned 9. But I'm constantly in contact with other moms and a lot of young moms, and I have a younger sister who has a lot of friends who are getting pregnant, and it's always a part of my life because I feel like every young mom that I see or pregnant mom, I can sort of I don't want to say commiserate, but I feel like I have something to offer them if they're having trouble. And I know the story from the beginning, Amber said she's sort of afraid to tell her story because there's so much judgment attached to motherhood. And I would actually say that I feel completely the opposite, because what I learned was that I was judging myself too harshly, and I know everybody else was judging me and every other mom out there as well. But since I've come through the other side of postpartum depression, I've realized that the judgment has got to stop, and I'm almost anxious to tell somebody who's having trouble, I've been there, and it doesn't mean you're a bad person, and it doesn't mean you're a bad mom, and you can get through this too.
Karen, I want to turn to you. Everybody knows the famous or infamous story of postpartum. Well, I guess in this case, it's psychosis. Earlier in the fall, when the Connecticut woman, Miriam Carey, caused the Capitol to be locked down. She led police in the car chase with her baby in the back seat, only to be shot and killed. What's interesting is Amy Joyce wrote an article shortly thereafter in the Washington Post, and she described how her friends and neighbors, mothers, you know, who all said things like along the lines of, "I almost get it, and we've all been there." So what's the inside story of what's happening in the brain? This is a combination of hormones, society, psychology?
All of it. And unfortunately, that's what makes the diagnosis and coping with it so unclear to both the health professionals and the moms. You know, we know mental illness is a brain disorder, and we know that, you know, for other medical disorders, we screen, we medicate, we treat, and with mental health disorders, we judge and we worry and we have shame and we don't talk about it. And so postpartum women, we think, are notoriously good at making sure that everything looks good from the outside, so you all know I'm a good mother, so I look good and I sound good and I say all the right things. And there's, you know, there, as Amy points out, that the stigma is still so huge that we don't talk about it. Now, I don't know specifically with Miriam, you know, what her diagnosis really was. There's a lot of speculation, and the media always loves to tell these stories, and we don't always know exactly what's going on. But with postpartum depression, for instance, there are a lot of women who are suffering with a lot of depressive symptoms who now become more scared to talk about it once it's sensationalized and once it splashes the headlines, because they're more afraid, not less, more afraid that somebody's going to misunderstand.
And more afraid of their own symptoms, perhaps.
And more afraid of their own symptoms, and could I lose control, and could something catastrophic happen to me?
Amy, did you feel shame? It doesn't sound like you felt shamed. It sounds like you went after this right away.
No, that's actually not true. I feel that way now, but I started off with a lot of shame, a lot of shame. I just, what the message that I came out of it with, but not which I started it with, is that postpartum depression doesn't care how smart you are. It doesn't care if this pregnancy was planned or not. It doesn't care if you're married or if you're not married. It doesn't care how old you are. It just attacks you. And I really struggled with shame through probably the entire pregnancy. And
if I could add to what Amy's saying, Amy, if you don't mind, that,
no.
You know, she's what she's describing is such a classic profile for women who are accomplished and hardworking and good at everything, and often perfectionistic by nature, and really like to be in control. And who doesn't, you know, be in control of your life? And so Amy really struggled with how to, you know, I don't feel in control of my life. And when you're used to feeling that way and being so accomplished, it's hard to reconcile and talk about it out loud.
Mm. And, you know, for most parents, you know, we live with the illusion that we have some control over our children. But we get over that, hopefully, when they're in their 20s or 30s. We've got to take a short break. When we come back, Carol, I want to talk with you about the clinical issues and what can be done, what can't be done, and the big question of antidepressants for mothers who are pregnant and or nursing. We're talking with Karen Kleiman, an international expert on postpartum depression, Amy Ruggiero, a mother of two boys who experienced, past tense, postpartum depression during pregnancy and afterward. Hey, we'd love to hear from you if you've had any of these symptoms, or if you're pregnant or thinking of getting pregnant. Give us a call. We're at 888-477-9499. We're also going to be talking about postpartum depression in the family, and we'd love to hear from the fathers, from men. So please give us a call, 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
Do you feel the need to check and recheck constantly? Are you a prisoner of certain rituals and compulsions? Keystone Clinical Studies in Norristown is conducting a research study of an investigational medication for treating obsessive-compulsive disorder, or OCD. If you're between 18 and 65 and have been diagnosed with OCD, you may be eligible to participate. 610-277-8073, 610-277-8073, or KeystoneClinicalStudies.com. Keystone Clinical Studies supports WHYY.
Devereaux is a proud supporter of WHYY. For more than 100 years, Devereaux has provided care to individuals with developmental disabilities and mental and behavioral health disorders. Devereaux's work also includes its full continuum of autism-specific programming for individuals of all ages, including residential services, community-based group homes, employment training, and support and educational programs. For more information on Devereaux's autism-specific services, devereaux.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb. We're talking with Karen Kleiman and Amy Ruggiero about postpartum depression. Our number is 888-477-9499. We'd love to hear from you. We'd also love to hear from men. 888-477-9499. Karen, when I looked at the American Psychological Association webpage, they, of course, listed exposure to toxins as increasing risk for PPD. But I found it interesting how they define toxins. They consider toxins crowding, air pollution, of course, socioeconomic status, and lack of social support as toxic to pregnant mothers and putting them at higher risk for PPD. What about stressors?
Yeah, you know, when we look at the cultural impact, we know postpartum depression is a global phenomenon, but and I have to admit this is not an area that I've done any particular specific research on, but the universal impact is so interesting because different cultures respond differently to this period of time in a woman's life. And in many various cultures, you know, they seclude mom. And they protect mom, and they have family members taking care of baby, taking care of business, and there are rituals that protect mom. And it's been, you know, studied to see that this will significantly reduce the impact of depression. So stressors are huge, and we, you know, one of the things that we do at the Postpartum Stress Center, especially if we're seeing a mom who's pregnant and at risk because she's had a previous depression, let's say, or then we try and do whatever we can to reduce those stressors, whether they are psychosocial, whether they're environmental, whether it's about their marriage and about work and whatever's going on. And we know that it puts them at greater risk.
I want to talk about the big picture of what's available. But I want to mention that issue I brought up earlier, and that's medication with pregnant mothers and, you know, postpartum mothers who are breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
What's the thinking there? I know you're not a medical doctor and can't address it from a medical point of view, but what's the thinking in that area? What's the research?
Well, in general, the soundbite is that, you know, we understand that women are very worried about this, as well they should be, and we try very hard to look at the research and protect every mom in every instance. But we are also extremely worried about the impact of untreated maternal depression. So we worry about moms who are worried about this, and we know that not treating depression can be deadly. We know that it can, you know, mom who's pregnant or mom who's breastfeeding, if she has significant symptoms and she's not taking care of herself, we worry about the attachment. We worry about, you know, her ability to take good care of herself and her baby. So the thinking is primarily that we are comfortable that there are medications that are compatible with pregnancy and with breastfeeding, and it's always a risk-benefit analysis. It's always, at least in my practice, it's a long discussion, you know, of what the options are, what the different medications are, what are the pros and the cons, and how sick, you know, how bad are the symptoms.
Well, you and I are I'm about to take both of us out on some very thin ice, neither one of us being medical doctors. But I also, I mean, we know about the genetic risk of depression, and I've heard some say that the minuscule amount of antidepressants they get might diminish a baby in breast milk, might even diminish their risk for depression.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Yeah,
the minuscule amount of exposure to the breast milk for the baby, to the antidepressant.
Right, for right? the baby might even be...
Oh, could protect the baby
right.
from depression?
Right. Is there any research on that?
Yes. I can't speak with any intelligence about that.
Aha.
Uh-huh. Well, I can certainly speak about it, though.
My God, kind of psychotherapist are you? You're supposed to make stuff up.
No, I'm good. I'm just not intelligent. You know what? What scares me about the research is that, the research is facts, and it's wonderful, and it's awesome, but it's numbers that can often be very scary to mom. Who can't necessarily translate it. And when we're talking to a mom in our office, it's less about the research and it's more about how are you feeling and what do we need to do to protect your baby. There are all kinds of things that could make your baby depressed later on. Do you know what I mean? Or we can protect your baby as well as we can. But when we're talking about research, sometimes it's 1% of the 1% of the 2% that are even, compared to relative to normal. Women are exposed to all kinds of things, whether it's antidepressants or not, whether they're depressed or not. Are you following me?
Good point.
So there are so many things that even women who are not depressed are exposed to. We want to keep you as healthy and reduce the risks of anything bad happening. And really bad things can happen.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Margie on the line. Hi, Margie.
Hi, Dan, Dr. Dan and company. I just wanted to mention that back in 1987, when I gave birth to my first wonderful daughter, after 5 years of infertility treatments, I suffered what I understand in retrospect to have been postpartum depression. But it was not part of the national vocabulary then. And so I wasn't treated. I didn't know to seek treatment. And there was a lot of shame involved. So I'm thrilled to hear the level of awareness and destigmatization that's happening now. At the time, the only thing that helped me was I got lots of social support, and luckily for me, I was an illustrator, and what I ended up doing was creating a cartoon and a comedy act and a comedy workshop around the issue, which got me through it, but it didn't cure the depression, but it normalized it for me. And I'm curious to hear, what your guests have to say about that. I wish I had had the medication, but I didn't, and so I found other ways through it. Now I am on a small dose of antidepressant, and it's changed my life. But back then, I didn't know about it.
Margie, you're opening up a very important issue, and of course, comedy, as far as I'm concerned. One of the Ten Commandments should be, thou shalt not take thyself too seriously. So I think that part's critical, but you're bringing up a very important topic, and that's therapies aside from medication. And Karen, I'm aware you wrote a book called Therapy in the Postpartum Woman.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we do that is not therapy? And I also want to hear, Amy, what you did.
I do want to respond also to Margie that this other book, this isn't what I expected. We just revised it 20 years later, and I want to just say that we were stunned, Valerie and I, at how much has not changed, And in addition to some of the obvious wonderful things like public awareness and legislation and more research, those are wonderful, we were just really shocked that we would have thought that by now there would be less pressure to be perfect. By now we'd understand more about the hormones. By now we'd have medications that worked without side effects. You know what I mean?
Wow.
And so many things have not changed from the time that, that we first started really talking about this. So that being said, I've gone full circle with medication and therapy in terms of my own practice. When I first started as a social worker, I was very, we don't need medicine, we can just talk about it and tell me about your feelings, and I was very touchy-feely oriented, and it helped. But the more research I did and the more I studied it, the more I saw that women who were taking, you know, medicine were getting better quicker because there was biology involved, and they were having symptoms that responded very well to the biochemical intervention. So then I became more of a medical model, and I worked closely with psychiatrists, and we'd see women getting better on medication, and that worked well for a long time until we started doing more research, until we started seeing, you know, women were suffering with some side effects. And so now I'm sort of the way I do everything. I take it all very seriously, but I don't just have one route. And for you, it might be medication, but for you, we need to talk about what your daddy did when you were 6 years old. And we can't do that when you're six, but we have to do it as part of a growing experience. So for women who have biologic symptoms, for women who have symptoms that are biologic, and those are things like panic attacks, and they can't sleep, and they can't eat, and they're having suicidal thoughts, and they can't concentrate, okay? Those are biologic symptoms that do respond very well to medication.
Well, I also want to add, in my experience also, that when you're having symptoms that are that powerful and demanding, talk therapy is not going to find its way in there.
Can't do it then, right?
No. Your brain is on fire and really needs help. I should also say, you know, we're also talking about non-medication interventions, and we talked about, you know, the APA listed a toxin as lack of social support. And one of the things I do with patients when they're depressed or anxious, whether it's postpartum or not, I have them, or I help them kind of mobilize a network. Very often I have people go out at least 2 hours a week to volunteer to help sentient beings, whether it's dogs, young people, old people, ill people, and that begins to change brain chemistry, and in my experience there's no side effects whatsoever.
That's right. And we have there's so much attention to that right now. There's so much attention to the advantages, the physiologic advantages to interventions such as mindfulness and breathing and learning how to be present and smiling, faking a smile, and the messages it sends to your brain and the neurotransmitters that respond, and that people actually feel better. Absolutely. And I also want to emphasize, Dan, what you just said. In terms of the social support, you know, the inclination is to withdraw, and isolation is so dangerous for moms who are feeling this way. There's such healing power in the networking, in the community of support, whether it's family, whether it's friends, whether it's in person, whether it's online. We know that it can have great power to heal.
I've got one quick question before we go on a break, Karen, for you. And that is, we got a caller who wanted to talk about postpartum depression among adoptive parents. And and she said there's even more stigma there because there's theoretically less explanation.
True. And it is one of the things that tells us, it teaches us that it's not all biology, and that there are so many other components to our understanding this fully. I've seen it in my practice, and our society doesn't tolerate this because, my God, you've been through so much, and you finally got what you wanted, and now you don't want to be with your baby, or now you're feeling so bad. We live in a culture that doesn't understand nor, frankly, tolerate very well moms that don't feel good about being a mother. Mm. And moms, I agree. I think there's even a group, PAD, I'm not sure, postpartum after, I don't know what it's called. But there, more and more women are talking about this, and there's more shame attached to that. They don't like saying it out loud if they've been through such an arduous process.
Well, I will tell adoptive parents who have postpartum depression, I will invite you to contact Karen at the Postpartum Stress Center, and knowing of her reputation, she will do some research, and if she can't help you directly, she'll find out what those three letters mean.
Oh, it's postpartum. I know what it is. It's post-adoption depression, and of course we can help her.
Okay, there you go. Karen Kleiman is the founder of the Postpartum Stress Center, and she's authored What This Isn't What I Experienced Now in its second edition. We've also got Amy Ruggiero. She's a mother of two boys. We're going to be talking with her after the break about what she did and what happened to make her feel so good. Our number is 888-477-9499. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
Do you feel the need to check and recheck constantly? Are you a prisoner of certain rituals and compulsions? Keystone Clinical Studies in Norristown is conducting a research study of an investigational medication for treating obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. If you're between 18 and 65 and have been diagnosed with OCD, you may be eligible to participate. 610-277-8073, 610-277-8073, or keystoneclinicalstudies.com. Keystone Clinical Studies supports WHYY.
Devereaux is a proud supporter of WHYY. For more than 100 years, Devereaux has provided care to individuals with developmental disabilities and mental and behavioral health disorders. Devereaux's work also includes its full continuum of autism-specific programming for individuals of all ages, including residential services, community-based group homes, employment training, and support and educational programs. For more information on Devereaux's autism-specific services, devereaux.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking with Karen Kleiman and Amy Ruggiero about postpartum depression. Let's go right to the phones. We've got Lisa on the line. Hey, Lisa.
Hi, Dan.
Yeah, hi.
I'm just calling in to tell you a little bit about some programs that we do have at Virtua for postpartum support, and we work along with the therapist in the community and helping our patients.
So, which Virtua are you at?
Well, both North and South, our Memorial and our Voorhees campuses do have free support for moms.
How do they find you?
Oh, they can go to our website, virtua.org, and our therapists in the community are aware of free programs for moms with postpartum depression or anxiety.
So you've got therapists actually in the community, too.
We partner with the therapists.
Yeah, that's great. I'm curious about what kind of services you have. And Karen, I'd like you to piggyback here. What kind of services really are available for these women, and what works best? Lisa, you want to start? And we'll ask Karen to come in.
Well, at Virtua, we screen all of our moms prior to discharge to identify the moms at risk. And then we'll follow up with them, telling them a little bit about, educating them about postpartum depression, and then referring them to services if they are still having continued symptoms. We'll help make sure that they're followed in their postpartum visit, which is about 6 weeks out. And then if they have significant symptoms, we will connect them with a service for counseling.
Well, this is great for our listeners to know. And if you can shoot us the email address or the website of your program, we'll get it up on our webpage post haste. Lisa, thanks so much for your call. Karen, do most hospitals have programs like this, or is Virtua unusual?
We are good neighbors of Virtua. Our South Jersey office is right down the street from Virtua, and in fact we used to be housed, the Postpartum Stress and Family Wellness Center is in South Jersey, and they used to be housed in Virtua. So we're very familiar with their work, and it's more and more popular to have perinatal programs associated with hospital systems, which is really nice. In Jersey, you know, you might recall that Jersey was the first state to mandate screening of all postpartum women, which was very exciting at the time, and then it gets sort of chaotic because nobody really knows what to do with all these women. It's a high percentage of women who are screening positive for postpartum depression. So there's a plus side and a downside, but the plus side outweighs it because, again, we're paying attention and, sure. and hospitals are watching for this.
Sure. I want to turn to you, Amy. Mm-hmm. We haven't heard from you for a while, and I mostly want to make sure you didn't drift off to sleep.
No, I'm here.
Good, good. So you sound great. You say you're feeling great, and boy, you sure as hell were not 9 years ago. So tell us what got you here.
Time and understanding of myself. It took a while to come out of it, and I really am out of it. I feel great, and I can look back on that and see that the good that came out of it was that I can see it in other people. When I got pregnant with my second child, I was kind of like Karen was at the beginning of her career and thinking medication is not for me. I'm just going to pull myself up by my bootstraps here. And I learned a lot through my postpartum depression and antepartum depression that it's simply not enough sometimes. So what helped me was my family. My husband was wonderful. There were more than not, actually, when he either couldn't go to work or when he came home from work, he had to put my son to bed, my two-year-old, put me to bed, make us dinner, clean the house, get our laundry done. So I often credit him for saving my life and being who God sent to help me. I saw Karen sometimes 2 to 3 times a week during that time.
What was the therapy like, may I ask? I mean, Karen, talked about something, you know, dynamic or analytic, going back to your past and previous relationships with significant people, or was it more focused on here and now, or both?
Yeah, it was kind of both. What I realized through therapy was that I've had OCD probably my entire life, which I didn't know. I didn't know what it was. I knew what I did and how frustrating it was, but I never realized that it was something. So we did talk about my past and things that that I used to do to cope, and if I'd ever been depressed before, which of course I didn't think I ever had, but we actually found out that I probably was a couple times, just barely. But so we did talk about the past and about how I grew up and what I had for expectations of me becoming a mother. Mm. But I think it depended on how acute my symptoms were that day, because if I walk into the office and I cannot hold myself together, it's really just sort of a 911 call. Like, who is going to help us get through this right now? Who can we call to come take the baby? Who can we have come and let you take a nap and get a shower? And so it just depended on how acute my symptoms were, and then slowly worked through just coping mechanisms.
And we do address that, you know, Dan, in that book, Therapy and the Postpartum Woman. I have a chapter that's actually, do we call this therapy? Because there is, mm-hmm. you know, as you point out, first we have to put the fire out. First we have to give her symptom relief before we can do anything else. And putting the fire out may mean, like Amy said, you know, do we have to get our support system in? How do we take care of the baby? What do we do this day? Have you eaten? Are you sleeping? And so we don't really get to the good therapy part until symptoms resolve and she's feeling better. But let me also piggyback onto what she said with her husband, which is really important, because the marriage, you know, we have a lot of research that substantiates how vital the marriage is in terms of her recovery, and that she will get better. She will get better faster and better with the support of a spouse who's part of the treatment.
What does postpartum depression do to marriages? I almost want to use the word typically, and I know that's not fair.
Right. Well, there isn't anything typical, because many women will say later that it transformed their marriage in a positive way, but just as many women will say that they, you know, that they're walking around angry, resentful, disappointed, and sort of feeling unlovable because they didn't feel like they were taken care of, which is it's a whole other show. It's a whole other book, and but the truth is, part of what happens in therapy is we try and create this holding environment so that we can do a little bit of all of that. If the marriage isn't good, you know, we want to take care of that. If she, you know, if her support system needs attending, we want to take care of that. And so, and that's part of our job as a therapist.
Who takes care of spouses or partners? I mean, well, you know, we have our own problems and anxieties and unreasonable expectations.
Right. It's part of, at least at the Postpartum Stress Center, it's part of our treatment. We bring spouses in, and we either have sessions with both of them, or we have individual sessions, and depending on what their needs are. And certainly there are spouses who get depressed and anxious too, who need to be attended to quite carefully and individually, who have their own issues with this.
And Amy, your husband was not one of them. He seems to have done okay.
Yeah, he kept it together. He did come in quite often with me to see Karen. He never ended up going on medication himself or having his own individual appointments, but he was very often with me.
And he also felt comfortable contacting me if he was concerned or if he had issues and wasn't sure how to handle something. We like to leave those lines of communication open.
Great. Listen, before we go back to the phones, Cameron, I want to revisit an issue we touched on earlier because it's so important. I've got a couple of callers. Somebody else sent in through Twitter. They want to know, is it safe to take medications while nursing?
Yes. You know, again, we don't want to ever say that anything is completely safe. We use the word compatible. It's compatible. And we are very comfortable at the Postpartum Stress Center using certain medications that we are comfortable with for breastfeeding moms during pregnancy and for breastfeeding moms. So I say yes. But again, it's always a risk-benefit analysis. We say the best medication for you is the medication that works. The best indication of that is if you've been on medication before, or if someone has been successfully treated with medication in your family. Those would be the first medications we'd look at to help you.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Michelle on the line. Hi, Michelle.
Hey.
Hi.
I'm really excited to hear the show right away. It just resonated with me because I have been through all of this. And feel like I do have something, you know, to share that could maybe help other people. I have three children. My first pregnancy, I did not want to be on any kind of medication, which is, you know, I think a typical way that most women feel. About 5 months into the pregnancy, 4 to 5 months, I started to just completely lose my ability to function. I was anxious. I was depressed. I didn't want to be pregnant anymore. I felt like I couldn't function in my daily life. My husband had to really pull me up. I told him I just didn't want to do this anymore. I had to do that cost benefit analysis with my doctors. And luckily they were very supportive and said, you know, it is okay for you to take medication. It's not good for your baby for you to be going through this kind of anxiety and depression, not sleeping, not eating. It's not good for your baby. It is your choice, but it's worth it. It's worth the risk for you to feel better, you know, if that will help you. And I've got to tell you, it saved me. And with my next pregnancy, I again didn't take any medication. It was earlier that I started having the same symptoms again. Went back on the medication, had a wonderful rest of my pregnancy, and by my third pregnancy, I said, you know what, I'm going to just stay on it this time. And my third pregnancy was by far my best, my happiest, and, you know, fortunately, I have three healthy children now.
Could I respond to this quickly, Dan?
Yeah, please.
Michelle, I just want to say that's a wonderful story. You sound great. And the take-home message here is that, again, with medication, there's still such a stigma with the medication, not just the illness, but the medication. We don't think twice when we medicate a woman with cardiac problems and she's pregnant or postpartum. We don't think twice about medicating her for diabetes because we have to. You know, but we always think with mental illness or with, you know, with postpartum depression or prenatal that there's a choice, that if you just got your act together, you could be strong enough and take care of this. And for some women, that's not at all the case. And we shouldn't be thinking twice when we have to medicate.
Well, and I think one more thing, which one of the hard things with these medications is they can take a little while to start to work. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the hardest periods for me because I hit rock bottom, really. But I had to wait another week or two till the medication really kicked in, and that's where I really needed to lean on my husband. You know, I'd be up half the night with anxiety, and I'd say, could you just keep me company? Could you kind of just comfort me? Because I need someone to kind of help me through this. And that is when you really need someone to support you.
That's perfect, and that addresses the whole issue of, you know, what spouses can do and what we need. And pregnant mothers need to be able to say to their spouse or partner or who's ever in the house, please hold me. I need you, which is a good thing for anybody to say when they're suffering. I do want to add something else. Karen and Amy and Michelle brings this up. You know, you go through it. That means you're at risk of it happening again. You go through it again, your risk is even higher. That's the same with clinical depression. I mean, and you know, I had 3 episodes of clinical depression, and they say with 1 episode, you take medication. With 2, you take it longer. And with 3, you take it for the rest of your life.
Right.
And I do. And, you know, you know, like Michelle, I'm a happy boy.
Right.
And I'm so thrilled that I mean, what we've done here is we've really developed the issues of not just medication, but therapy and social supports. And boy, I'll tell you, I don't think we could have done this without you, Amy Ruggiero. You know, your openness and honesty and candor has just been wonderful and important. So thank you, Amy, for joining us.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
And Karen Kleiman is, her book is called This Isn't What I Expected. It's out in an updated second edition. And at the risk of being judgmental, buy that book. It's very important. Karen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Dan, for having me.
And next week on Voices in the Family, it will be the unique challenges faced by step families, and anybody who is in one, which is lots of people, know all of those challenges, I'm sure. Well, thank you for listening, and to download our podcast, go to whyy.org/voices. We are on Twitter. We're at Voices in the Fam, and I'm at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Adam Staniszewski, and Elizabeth Perez-Lunes, our executive producer of audio content. Emily Haas is our production assistant. Mike and Scott's our EP. Jennifer Lynn's our producer. And I'm Dan Gottlieb.